listening to Down by the Bank, a Jacksonville Jaguars podcast with Corey, Derek, and JK3.
All right, welcome to Down by the Bank, affiliated with the Blue Wire Podcast Network. This is Corey.
Hey, guys, what's up? It's Derek.
Hey, what's up, guys? It's JK3.
Hey, it's a great honor today. We have JP Shadrick, all things Jaguars, Jaguars Radio Network, senior reporter, editor, just straight up one of the most recognizable folks in the organization, I think just based on his voice alone. So we're super honored to have JP here. Hey, how are you doing, JP? Doing all right today?
I'm good. I'm JP, everybody. Everybody had to intro themselves, so I figured I had to do it also. But it's good to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on. I know this started at a chance meeting at Strings, I think,
and
turned into this. So here we are at opening week, and a lot to talk about.
It's so funny because I saw you at Strings and I heard you. I was like, oh, man, that's really him. So actually hearing the voice and seeing the person behind it.
And
so
boy, crazy is he ugly. Woo. That's what you said. That's what you said to your people that were there.
Is that what you said?
No. Really, man. I'll tell you. So, JP, it was my birthday. My buddy, we got shout out to Jonathan Graves, JG. He saw you and he says, hey, that's JP over there. I'm like, JP Shadrick? Yeah. Okay. Well, I got to work the room and, you know, then I'll, you know, come over and introduce myself, shake his hand. And he went and told JK3. And before I knew it, JK3 was already over there. And I'm like, oh, okay. Then he's got it. I got to keep working the room because people kept showing up. But no, we love that place, you know, although
that's a great spot. Isn't it? It is unbelievable. Yep. The deep people do unbelievable work and it's a great space. I love going there. It's too bad they don't have 75 cent wing night on Mondays anymore because there's a wing shortage apparently in the country. So they had to change that, unfortunately, but I love that place.
Yeah. These guys are a lot more smooth when it comes to walking up to somebody like you. And like, as I'm saying, the intro with your bio and everything,
I'm over shaking. Somebody like me. Come on, man. Like
I'm you're famous.
I'm just a guy. I'm here. No. I'm very fortunate to be
He's a Jag.
He's
just another guy.
I'm just a guy who likes chicken wings and beer.
Okay. All right. That's a good way to look at it. Well, they're more smooth than me in pretty much all ways of life, but that's another conversation. Okay. So yeah, we appreciate you coming on, you know, just to get started. You know, you've been with the Jaguars for, you know, quite a while now, and you've seen a lot in that time. How does this year stack up to prior years in terms of the expectations and the excitement with all the new additions that the team has?
Well, it's season 10 for me. My first season here was 2012, and that was right after the ownership change. Mr. Connor just bought the team. And let's see, Mike Mularkey was hired as the head coach. Gene Smith was in his what would be his final year as the general manager. So, you know, for me, I was just so new to it and green. Oh, this is what the NFL is. No, whatever. And then it all blew up after a year. They changed it all again and brought in Dave Caldwell and Gus Bradley and gutted the roster and started from there. That didn't really work out. We know how that change happened at the end. Doug Marrone was here. He stayed on as the head coach, but here comes Tom Coughlin a little later in the announcement to run everything. So I've seen it a few different ways. This one is different because it feels like after 9 years of ownership for Shad Khan, he's seen those ways as well firsthand, even closer, obviously, than I have because he's right there in the middle of every conversation that goes on. So he's seen different ways to go about it, and maybe he's learned from some of the past mistakes. And he said, you know what? This is the time. Let's go get a guy that is a proven winner in college. Not that that would equate to the NFL, but he has a process for doing things. He is detail-oriented, and you know that his track record is, at least in wins and losses in college, because of that detail is impeccable. And then obviously, go get the quarterback. You got the number one overall pick. You weren't planning to go 1-15, as some pundits said they did. That was not the case at all. But parlay all that into one big season here this offseason. I don't remember the anticipation for a season, at least in the time that I've been around here, as for this. So new coach, new quarterback, brand new defense, spent a bunch of money in free agency. The expectations, I don't know. We'll get to that in a little bit, but I think the excitement level is as high as it's been since I've been around here.
What about just covering the team and being up face and up close and personal to Urban and the coaching staff? You know, what are the key differences in covering the team with Urban as the leader and head coach versus the prior head coaches? Is there anything that stands out? Maybe even just, you know, from a college perspective, some of the things that maybe he took from college that aren't as common with, you know, maybe NFL head coaches.
I'll say this first of all, we're not really up close and personal. It depends on your tiering level. You know, there's still the COVID tier system, which is strange, right? So I'm in right now as we record this, I'm in our radio studio here in the building, right? And I'm in the business side. There's a they call it the rubber hallway. There's a hallway that goes between by the locker rooms here and all that. It goes all the way from the north end of the stadium to the south end on the Jaguars side. So, and on the field side of that is the football offices, coaching staff, a couple other locker rooms, some meeting rooms and all that. Well, on this side is all business. It's the ticket sales office, it's sponsorship and all that. Well, over here, you don't cross into the rubber hallway anymore because of COVID-19 tiering system. So players and coaches are tier one. Folks that are immediately around them are still tier two. I'm tier stay the hell away from everybody as much as you can, I think.
Oh, okay.
So I kid a little bit, but you have to be at a certain tier level to even go to the press conferences anymore. And there are certain numbers of people inside the organization that can be tier 2M or whatever is allowed to go interact with Urban or players at the podium or whatever that is. So not quite on that. So I'm not interacting face-to-face with Urban as much as maybe I did in the offseason, because those rules weren't really around in the offseason. They kind of buttoned it down a little bit now that the regular season is here. Now, I'll say this about Urban. I do like the fact that he has been very transparent about what he knows and does not know about the NFL. He didn't really know what to expect in that front. I didn't really know him that well. I did some work with him way back, and it was such a long time ago and so minimal that it wouldn't really matter in this scope. But his reputation, was he going to be one that knew it all and this is the way it is and this is the way we're going to do this? Or was he going to be really open-minded? It's been a pleasure to hear him be open-minded and listen to advice from all parts of the organization and people who've been around the league before. And he's going to open every avenue to try to get information about something he doesn't know, whether that's player acquisition or contracts or, you know, a 2-minute drill and play clock and everything. I mean, everything, hash marks, they're different. I mean, he's going to ask questions of anybody that knows anything about those topics that he does not know about or might be different. So, and he's been very honest about that. So for in my world, in radio land, it's great to have great sound bites from Urban Meyer. That's fantastic. I think the big question, though, is how will that last throughout the season? Will that last throughout the season? If things, and there will be some adversity, if things don't go well in a certain week or two, how does he handle the things he has to do after the game or Monday after watching tape? And, you know, can he put it aside if there's a loss and then have that 24-hour rule, and then Tuesday, boom, we're on to Cleveland, right? As Bill Belichick said. So that's you don't know, because losses in college are so much more meaningful, as some on this podcast know already this year,
right,
than NFL, right? You lose a college football game and your chances of going to the national championship are done. Right. In the NFL, you got 16 more games after week one, and it's right. Not the end of the world. There's no rankings. You have to impress voters. It'll be a little adjustment. I'm curious how that happens, when it happens, because it will happen, and how he handles that. But so far, it's been, I would say, very good covering him, because he always gives you something to work with.
Derek, real quick, some context around that college football thing. So Derek's the one who's 0-1 with Florida State. So we recap this. We got JP with Alabama, 1-0. We got JK3 with the Florida Gators, 1-0. And we have me with UNF, undefeated forever in football. So just a heads up.
Oh, yeah.
What a record.
Yeah, what a record. You know, and working with, you know, and having Urban in the building now, and we look at it as fans, it's like, well, yeah, he's going to have to come through that. But then also it's the culture and the mindset And now that he, you know, we've gone through the draft, you got Trevor Lawrence, you know, he, same thing, you know, he's only used to winning. And a lot of national media before the draft, which we couldn't stand, I couldn't stand, said, oh, well, you know, it was his receivers or it was the system. It was always an excuse. And here locally, we're like, what are you talking about? He tore it up for 3 years. Like, so what do you think about that as far as like just some of the, I guess, you know, I don't know if it was because they don't like Jacksonville having an NFL team or just maybe just haterism, you know, who knows? But you should, being a Bama fan, that game his freshman year, it was the receivers that did that to Alabama's defense, not Trevor Lawrence. I don't believe that. I don't believe that at all. But, you know, some national members, I don't want to say names, they believe that. And I can't wait to show them and hopefully we prove them wrong.
Do they believe that or do they say it out of convenience? I think a lot of times that might be it because they are covering 31 other teams as well, a lot of these national NFL folks, and it's tough sometimes to dig deep. Now, digging that deep, it's not digging that deep to go watch the national championship game from 3 years ago and realize that the receivers didn't all take end-around handoffs to score those touchdowns in that game, by the way. Somebody had to throw them the football, and Trevor did a great job in that game as a freshman after, 15 games that season. So I can't take that away from him. I don't know. I understand the fans, the Jacksonville fans, Jaguar fans being upset and taking slights and, you know, being angry about that kind of thing. But he's here now. So let it go, I guess. I don't want to be that frank, but – I mean, I know you want to get angry and show them that, oh, you know what, we got it now. Well, you know what? We'll do that. Winning 10 games in the show. Win 10 games and go 10-7, and you're in the playoffs year after year after year, consistent winning like Shad Khan wants, then guess what? The national people will love you, and because they'll get to come down here and play Sawgrass and hang out by the river and do, you know, NFL Live or whatever the show is, and be around some and interact with this organization more, and because they have to at that point, and they're going to have to turn and love it because it's 10-7. That's how you do it.
Yeah, that's how I feel sometimes. I forget what the name of the song is, but it's an old song where you're gonna love me, you know, you're gonna love. That's what I feel like after we win 10 games, hopefully make the playoffs. They're gonna be forced to love us or else.
That's right.
Yeah, so.
I mean, Buffalo, right? I mean, Buffalo's good again. Everybody loves Buffalo all of a sudden. Like, right. You know, when they stink.
Well, I mean, that's debatable. I don't know if everyone loves them. You know what I mean? Maybe the Wings. But you know, with the 53-man roster, you know, kind of finally set, I'd be interested to see, and I don't know if you have any insight to this, but how are they going to continue to evaluate players, you know, to make sure that Urban's getting the best on the field? I mean, you know, reduce – you know, preseason, you've got a couple of names, you know, more specifically that's come to light right now with the, you know, Wingard and Cisco situation. You know, how are they going to continue to evaluate that talent? Is it going to be, you know, in the, you know, the limited amount of practices they have? Is it just going to be when, you know, someone gets a shot? You know, how do you think that would, you know, going forward, evaluate that talent?
I think that's with any staff. It's every rep you get, whether it's in practice or in a game, counts, and it's big, and that's why, because of the limited repetitions in preseason this year, the only three games, they weighed much more heavily than they did in the past, at least in my opinion, especially for the bottom third of the roster that you're trying to figure out, okay, can this guy be the backup safety and play two special teams units and do the, well, you only have one less game to try to figure that out.
Right.
Now, Once the season gets going, if you are able to make that 53, or even if you make that practice squad, that 16 guys on there, the rules are such that it's not a 53-man roster. It's just right. Like Jihad Ward said, there will be changes all year long. Guys are going to come and go. You can bring up a couple guys on game day even and not have them count against your limit. You only do that a certain amount of times a year. So they're going to trick this thing out. And, you know, guys that aren't on the wide receiver room right now on the regular, on the active roster, they'll be up and down all year long. And depending on the matchup against that week, I think it's going to be, as they said last week, a fluid situation with the roster. I don't think that was just on cut down week. That's going to be all season long. And it's like that most years anyway. I mean, let's be honest with you. Guys get hurt. People come and go. You're trying to figure out. You're never deep as you want to be at every position anyway. There's always that search to churn and try to find a little extra step somewhere down the depth chart. So I'm not overly concerned with it because I think it's what it is right now. They'll always try to improve it. They have the first waiver claim choice the first 3 weeks if somebody gets cut around the league, and then it resets by record at that point week to week. So let's hope we're not number one after week three. That would be nice. But they have some ability right now. They're not going to become a Super Bowl roster overnight with the number one waiver claim. It's just not going to work like that. But I don't think the 53 now is the end-all be-all because it will change, and it will change by this Sunday. It'll change by next Sunday. And it's just going to be an evolving way they look at players. That's just the nature of the beast, especially with that expanded practice squad now.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, no, and speaking of, and this is a small thing, looking at the entire roster, you know, we really haven't looked at special teams the last few years, especially kicking game. Herb's come in and made a couple of comments about, you know, we're going to evaluate every position. And then Lambeau starts missing kicks. Now, we know every kicker in the NFL has a short hook. How short do you think Lambeau's hook really is? You know, Urban's, you know, it's not going well. I'm sure he's quick to pull the trigger. But Lambeau's been probably our most consistent player, if you look at all three phases, so for the last 4 years, just at the kicking game.
Well, I mean, they did sign that Norwegian kicker. I can't pronounce his name right now, to the practice squad, just in case. And I mean, you kind of need that just in case COVID things pop up. Like, you need a specialist around, somebody who can at least get the ball away or punt or something, you know, if Cook is banged up or COVID or whatever. That's why that guy's there. I think this about Urban, he knows exactly what he's saying and why he's saying it. And when he was short when answering questions that week about Josh Lambeau and making kicks, he said something to the effect of, well, you got to make the field goal. You got to put it through the uprights. And that's all he said. Well, that tells you, well, you better put the darn football between the uprights, Josh Lambeau, right? That's what it's about. That's his way of showing a little pressure, showing that this is not a, you know, a loose matter here. We're not going to leave 3 points on the field when you miss field goals if it becomes a regular thing. And by the way, in practice, in training camp a lot, Urban stands during the field goals. Urban stands between the snapper and the holder right there. So he is on top of it. Like, he's right there, literally right off the holder's hip. He's standing right there beside the snap. So the kicker has, you can probably feel the kicker walk by him with the wind when he swings his leg. Like, that's how close Urban is to this thing. Just to apply some pressure. That's what it is. So better make the kicks. I don't know how short the hook is to answer your question, but you start missing field goals two or three in a game, especially if they feel like they're going to be tighter football games this year, that's not ideal. So, and Lambeau knows that. Like, you heard his, the other week he had his press conference and all that. He understands the business behind it. He doesn't like people trying to get into his head, so we'll avoid that here or whatever. But no matter whose head it is, as long as you make the field goals, you'll be fine.
Good, well, good. If Herbs is the biggest pressure that he's going to face all year, if that's what he, you know, if that's his biggest pressure, then hey, I guess crowds or 20-degree weather wherever we are won't matter. So hopefully that's the case.
Well, yeah, the guy making the roster decisions right there, breathing down your neck, that's pressure to me. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
The old saying, JP, is, you know, X's and it's all about the Jimmy's and Joe's, not the X's and O's. So with this roster right now, you know, we've added Hollister. We added, you know, Johnson from San Diego, who I've been, LA now, who I've been, you know, kind of just enamored with, you know, watching some of the plays that he's been making and some of the film that's been leaking. Realistically now, with this revamped roster, revamped defense, you know, Trevor Lawrence, all the, you know, whistles and bells, how many W's we got this year?
Oh, wow. You're going straight for the jugular.
Straight through it.
This team is on a 15-game losing streak currently. So
even counting Dallas?
I'm not counting preseason, man. Get out of here.
Come on, man.
I'm sure they won some preseason games last year, but hey, guess what? I forgot. I don't know. So they're on a 15-game losing streak. Remember that. So, and they should have won some games last year, but they didn't. And that's where they are. To go from 1-15 to 10 wins is a huge ask. But it's funny. We did this. We did a podcast today, Jaguars Reporters. Sorry to plug mine on yours, but it's on the official Jaguars Podcast Network. And we talked about actually, Osher brought up the point today, John Osher, our senior writer. You know, thinking about all the starting players on Sunday that could be back from last year's offense. Five offensive linemen are back. DJ Chark will be back. Laviska Shenault, that's seven. Running back, James Robinson. You could have eight offensive players of the 11 back from last season's 1-15 team, which is just crazy to think about. But that one big guy is wearing number 16 in the backfield. That could be the big difference. So what does the defense look like? I don't know. I mean, there's all a bunch of new people. They spent a bunch of money up front to stop the run. They four out of the five starters could be new in the secondary if Cisco wins the job or whatever. So that's a lot of new and a new coordinator and a new scheme. As long as they stop the run, if they get middle of the pack against the run this year, that's a marked improvement, big for that group. So for me, it's 7-8 wins, like right below 500 is a you want to win obviously more than that. I'd love a 10-win season; it would be incredible. Reality says it's 7-8 wins is a really good jump from 1-15. They'll never say that, obviously. They're trying to go out and win every week. But that's a good base. And here's the thing. The record, no matter what it is, if it's 1-16, as long as Trevor Lawrence improves week to week and everything around him is getting better, they'll never be 1-16. First of all, they'll be better and better as the year goes along. As long as he has some steady uphill improvement as this season improves or moves along and he improves, I think that's a really good place to be going into next season.
Okay. I think that's so part
seven
of
or eight. To answer your question, 7 or 8 is like, okay, that would be a really good year. In my opinion, a really good year would be 10 wins, 11 wins, but reality 7-8.
I mean, that's what I was going to say, but you said it, so I'll just go with it.
That's the official prediction right here first. I think that's part of it, too, though. Like you said, the excitement factor that, you know, now that we have some pieces that, you know, we can look forward to the future a little bit, even if we don't maybe rack up as many wins as we want. You know, we have Trevor Lawrence, we have Urban Meyer, we have all these other young guys that there's still going to be excitement nonetheless, which is kind of what I'm looking forward to. Yeah. But with all the you know, work that you've done with the team, particularly when it comes to interacting with fans like us, can you share maybe just a best memory or story, whether it be heartfelt or funny, ideally funny, with regards to an interaction with a fan on the radio or in person or otherwise?
Well, you know, in our post-game call-in show, the scoreboard show after the games. I don't know if you guys have listened to that before.
Yes. This is where I think where we were going with this.
We've got a guy named Saqib who calls in.
Oh, he calls in every game.
Every game. And you know how the game went before, you know, and you know the first phone call is usually Saqib. So if the game didn't go well, We're talking Saqib off the Hart Bridge some nights, you know. If the game goes well, you know, he's going to be, oh, yeah, Doug Marone's my guy, you know, that kind of thing. If not, it's like he wants to whack everybody. And I've never met Saqib. I've never met him in person. I don't think. Maybe in the past I may not have known that, but I think I would have remembered meeting Saqib because he's such an impactful caller for us for so many years. It's not just since I've been here. I think he's been calling forever. I mean, that's just what he does. So I we kind of look forward to what Saqib has to say after the game every week. That's one thing. You know, I'll occasionally get out and about. You know, you guys have met me out and about at an establishment, right? We'll say the brewery. You know, a couple other places like that I'll go. And I enjoy that, though. I enjoy people coming up and talking because I get it, man. Like, I'm a fan. I grew up in Alabama. I'm an Alabama fan, right? They don't pay me to do anything, but I still enjoy watching them play, right? But when I was a fan and in school and, like, in that mindset, I every time I would see somebody involved with the universe, that was a big deal. And I enjoy it. So I totally get, I enjoy people coming up and talking ball because I appreciate what that is. And like people listening to our stuff and podcasts and watching our shows and all excited about the team. Like, so, you know, unless I'm like, you know, I've never really say no. Like I always like talking to people. So this is the PSA for everybody listening to this. If you see me out and about, and if I'm not like in the middle of some like dinner or something like intimate like that, come on, man. Like I'll talk to anybody. And I enjoy that stuff. So I don't really have another story beyond that, but I just, in general, I enjoyed the conversation and the passion that the fan base has to, man, because it's real and it's a long time coming. Like this is a fun time. This fan base has been through hell and you guys know it. And
yeah,
now these are the fun times, hopefully ahead real soon.
It's tough covering a 1-15 team. Like, I don't know how you guys do it. I mean, you guys are really magicians when it comes to pulling out some things and creating content. I mean, you know, it's tough. It really is.
And I'll say this about that. I would not wish that on my worst enemy. I know. I just don't. It's, and I said this on an interview the other day, and it makes a lot of sense to keep thinking about it. Like, you know, the football team, you can't control what they do, right? They're 1-15. Okay, they stink. That's fine. But everybody over here on the business side of the office, we talked about the tiering system, right? The wall, and you can't, you know, well, they're trying to sell tickets for that. And they're trying to sell sponsorship for that. And they're trying to go in the community and market that to, it is dismal. Like there are 200 more than that, at least 200 full-time employees for this organization that come in here every day trying to support the football team. Right. And when you have a pretty good idea come Wednesday or Thursday that this football team is not going to compete that Sunday, that is a dismal existence, and it is tough to do. So it's not just me. I have nothing to do with me. I get to come on a microphone and talk football. Like, that's cool. Like, but for folks who have to go try to pound the pavement and do this all, that is really difficult. So I wouldn't wish 1-15 on my worst enemy. It is and I hope we never have to go through it again here. It's just absolutely awful for so many reasons, not just the football team, but for everything involved, the fan base, having to hear it from all sides, anybody involved in the organization. It's not a proud moment at all, but that's in the rear view now. So let's move forward and, you know, make some really good memories. And I'll say this too, about the 1-15 covering the team, right? I give Doug Marone a lot of credit because he still stood there and answered questions. He knew what was going on. His setup was not perfect because of the way it was set up with the leadership and things, but he always came in and did the Doug Marone show.
Yeah,
he might have been salty up front, but he was always great with me and with us on radio and understood what we were doing and why we were asking certain questions. We were never going to bury the guy. Like, that was never our MO. I mean, but he fought through and did the best he could for that team.
His skin is made out of Teflon because some of the questions that he was rolled up and asked, like, you know, that should have been directed at other, you know, staff members or leadership. And he just stood there every week and just took it.
And that's what I'm talking about. Right? So you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
some mm-hmm. questions that he had no business answering, and he would just do the best he could to answer it, or you know, direct them in a certain way. But that was just the lay of the land in the past years around here. So
now he's at Alabama. Now he's at Bama building another future offensive line.
Yeah, he's got a pretty good offensive line too. And by the way, if you watch the game on Saturday, and he's actually got six offensive linemen in the game. One of the guy that was listed at the right tackle, that was wearing number 60. They put a number 85 jersey on him and played him at tight end all day. So they had like six offensive linemen on the field against Miami just because they could dominate the trenches. They got a left tackle that probably is going to be a first round pick in Evan Neal. So Doug's in a pretty good spot. And I'll say this about Tuscaloosa, and you guys know this. It seems to be like the rehab center / car wash for assistant coaches, right? For coaches that have Bill O'Brien's there.
Yeah.
Right? Maybe you can go back and have a good winning year and then get back in it. It's a real thing. Seven of the last, well, this is the ninth OC at Alabama under Saban, right? Seven of the six of the previous eight, something like that, have gone on to head coaching jobs right after it. So it's just how it works, man. You come back, you kind of go through the thing and, you know, reset a little bit, learn something new maybe from Saban, and there you go. So
apparently if you're a college kid and an NFL coach, to get to the NFL, you go to Bama.
You're recruiting for Alabama now. That sounds like, hey, I mean.
No, it sounds like that was
a recruiting pick.
Absolutely not.
JP, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have you back in like 2 weeks for like a 10-minute snippet, and you're just going to ask JK3, what happened to your Gators this weekend? And then we'll just leave it at that and just let him respond, and we'll go from there.
It's funny. I have the Gators this week on Touchdown Radio. I do some college games on Saturday. So I had the Bama game last week, and I've got Florida, South Florida this week in Tampa. So I'm curious what the quarterback situation will be in Gainesville. I say play them both because why not? You know, I think it's too early to just pull the plug on Emory Jones. He was a high recruit for a reason, so give him a shot. I think you can still use Richardson in a way that can balance things out, and you can still win, especially this week. You played South Florida, for goodness sakes. They got blown out 45-0 last week against NC State. So don't panic. Don't panic. It's week number two coming up.
Same thing for you, Derek. It's Jackson State. You know, Deion's coming back to Florida State, man. So, you know, you don't want to lose him. So just be careful.
Jacksonville State. And yeah, we'll whatever. Get to that later. We'll get to it. JP's got to run. We'll get back to our debate later.
Yeah. Big difference.
But no, JP, we really appreciate it. And we'll definitely probably start a petition after this for a face-to-face with you and Saqib, or maybe a Patreon to get Saqib a press pass or something. That'd be probably pretty entertaining.
I don't know if we need Saqib with a press pass, but we can work on the face-to-face meeting. How about that? I like that part of it.
Oh, okay. All right. We'll see what happens. But no, we appreciate it. Thanks again. I mean, super kind of you to do this. And obviously, I mean, it'd be ridiculous for us to say, like, hey, you can find JP on Twitter, because I'm assuming all fans are already following you, and it's hard to miss you otherwise if you're a Jaguars fan. So again, JP, really appreciate the time. And thanks again for coming on today.
You got it, guys. Anytime. Let's do it again at some point during the season. Once we get rolling here, and once the Jags are like 7-0, maybe we can have like a positive.
Podcast. Don't get me hyped up, man. On a Tuesday, I got this Buffalo Trace next to me.
Maybe that's why we need to do the in person one next time. So you can bring that Buffalo Trace out.
There you go. That's a good idea. Well, no, we
appreciate
it,
you guys.
Yeah, no, thank you, JP. And if you guys are on Apple Podcasts, please hit the subscribe button, leave us a rating and review with 5 stars, preferably. And we're also on Spotify and Google Podcasts as well. So thanks again, everyone, for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.